You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Give us your best guess, then.
I just did.
No, you didn't. You didn't give us a time. When do you think this is going to... Are we going to be here 2 years from now wearing masks?
No,
Dr. Fauci the same question?
Well, let me... You're ranting again.
I'm not ranting.
Yes, you are.
No, here's how it works, Dr. Fauci.
Right.
I get to ask you the question. You're the highest paid official in the United States government. You've given us your advice on baseball, on dating apps, on cruise ships. You told us zero mask, one mask, two masks, now back to one mask. And you, when is it going to end? You can say, I'm actually asking the citizens. I get the privilege of a ballot. I don't think your name, my name goes on a ballot. The citizens I represent want to know the answer to when they can get their liberties back.
You know,
you can call that ranting. I actually call it standing up for the Constitution, which I take an oath to uphold, Dr. Fauci, every year, every term that I serve in this Congress representing the folks in the 4th District of Ohio. So it is not ranting. It is defending the First Amendment.
Badgering.
And we'd like an answer, or your best guess, since you've got an answer for everything else.
Ha, I love it. Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican of Ohio, grilling Dr. Anthony Fauci. This is April 16, 2021. Congressman Jordan going after Fauci for everything we all want to know. And he's right. He's asking the question we want. When is the end? When are you going to give us some kind of definitive answer? They move the goalposts continuously. Let's go back. Let's go back when COVID first surfaced on our shores. And Donald Trump realized we might have an issue. So he shut down flights direct from China. And what did the progressives and the lefts do? Oh, that's xenophobic. He's a racist. Doesn't like the yellow people. No reason to do that. Nancy Pelosi standing in the middle of Chinatown in L.A., San Fran, saying, come have lunch with me. It's all good. Well, no one was saying San Francisco or those living in San Francisco were responsible for COVID. That wasn't the point. And they know it, and you know it, but they were trying to get some extra run out of anything to assault Trump. So then we move forward, and there's a concern, do we need a mask? And Dr. Fauci, in a 60 Minutes interview in March of that same year, 2020, said, masks won't do you any good. It might stop one, drop it, but I wouldn't bother. And now he's wearing two masks and say you need two. This is even after you've had a vaccine. So Congressman Jordan's asking what all of us are, when is this going to end? You guys are using this as a control mechanism at this point. I have told you repeatedly, you make the decision you think is best for you and your family. If you want to buy into the whole thing that you made two, maybe four masks, and you don't want to venture outside your house and you don't let anyone come into your, that is entirely up to you. Others say, I'm not that concerned or I'll take a chance, whatever. And I tell you, I lost a very close relative to COVID. 10, 12 years younger than me, good shape, out of the clear blue. So I know that there's still a lot of suffering and deaths going on. But at some point, when is it coming to an end? And, of course, coming to the rescue for Dr. Fauci, CNN, and Dr. Cuomo. Oh, that's right. He's not a doctor, but he's playing one because he's saying, we're going to tell you the truth, the science. And of course, the Project Veritas Network exposed CNN was using COVID as a fear tactic. They continue. And we're also going to be joined a little bit later by a guest, Chris Bedford, senior editor with The Federalist, dealing with that 60 Minutes hit job on Florida Governor DeSantis. We'll have that story. And we also have court packing. Congressman Nadler today making a boo-boo, saying 13 is a nice number for the number of just a nice number. So you're just picking a number? Yeah, that's a boo-boo. We're going to get into that. And then you got Congressman McCarthy saying, Republican of California, Pelosi may say she's not in favor of court packing, but be careful. She'll flip As soon as she gets a pressure from the squad and the progressives, she'll do this, just like Joe Biden did, where he stands now compared to where he stood in 1983. And also, the Utah governor is defending racism. He's defending racism. In fact, he's enacting it. He's helping it go forward. The Utah governor. But there's a clarification. We'll get into that for you. And then, you probably didn't know this. This might not have been on one of your math tests. Math, did you know, is racist? It is. And then, something fun, or not. UFOs. Is the Pentagon ready to admit UFOs are here? Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
They want to dismantle the Supreme Court because they're trying to dissolve the American way. Think about it. Three co-equal branches. They have two branches right now. The only thing that holds them back from their socialist views going forward that are unconstitutional, like a D.C. statehood, is the Supreme Court that would stand up for the American people. So they want to pack the court to protect their power.
That's exactly right. That's what the progressives want to do. They're trying to protect their power. Why else would they want to suddenly pack the court? Well, of course, right now they have control of the Congress. They have the majority in the House. They have the tie vote that is needed in the Senate. And they've got Biden. In the last 30 minutes, it's still Biden. I don't think Kamala's taken over yet, but it could be before we wrap the program. You just never know. They got the White House. And as we've often said, they're like kids in a candy shop running through grabbing what we can. And why not get control of the third branch of government? They're all supposed to be separate and distinct and not under the rule and thumb of the other. That's the way it's supposed to be. Even Obama recognized that. I remember the interview I did with him and the last presidential interview I did. I lost how many presidents have I interviewed. I'm going through, let me see. Well, I can't count Lincoln because we don't have the tape. Yeah, I don't have the Abraham Lincoln interview, but others. Anyway, but the bottom line is, when I interviewed him at that time, the Obamacare bill had just been presented a week or so before, to the U.S. Supreme Court for consideration. Was it constitutional? And Obama, prior to the interview with me, had told reporters, well, I think the justices will do what is right. They will do what is right. So one of the questions I asked President Obama at that time was, Are you trying to use the White House as a bully pulpit to direct and control the Supreme Court? And his answer was quick. Well, of course not. He said, I can't do that. That's not the rule of the presidency. And he said, they wouldn't listen to him anyway. He said, no, I can't do that. I cannot direct and tell this court what to do. He's absolutely right. But right now, the Democrats are of a mind, yeah, we can tell the court what to do. They can make sure we can move D.C. to statehood, and we can do anything else we want. If we have the court packed with the numbers we want and the justices we want. There is no constitutional statement that they has to require a certain number of the U.S. Supreme Court. But we have, for some time, been at 9. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, maybe a year or less before her death, had stated, and I think she had stated it previously as well, that the correct number of justices for the Supreme Court is 9. She thinks that's a good number. That's what it should be, 9. Well, she was a very strong liberal, obviously. So she said it should be 9. Well, they can't jump on her and get upset with her. The progressives can be upset with her that she didn't resign when Obama was in office so he could appoint someone else. And it is true, maybe she was thinking that Hillary would win the election, so she would let Hillary replace her. And she might have resigned during Hillary. We don't know. But she did not survive President Trump's first term, and so with her passing, it fell on Trump to make an appointment. So they can't really, even the progressives can be upset with her for not resigning when they wanted her to. But there's no sense beating her down again. In my mind, now the progressives may seem to think it's just fine, even though she's dead. But I do know they've gone after Justice Stephen Breyer, another progressive, liberal-type justice. And you know what Justice Stephen Breyer has said? He basically has also spoken out against packing the court. He said it's not a good idea. We shouldn't do it. He stood up to the left and said, basically, no, just like Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, 9 is a good number, and I, as even being a liberal judge, think that's a good number. There's no sense expanding the court. But the Democrats are rushing in. They want to add 4 more. They want to move it to 13. Now, 13, that number itself, how did they come up with 13? Why not go, let me see, if they went to 12, obviously, well, then it would be, they might have to worry about a 6-6 going forward on future decisions. 11 would have been a difference number. I mean, you might get 5 on one side, 5 on the other, then one's making the final decision or making a decision that would swing it. But for some reason, they thought 13. Well, Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York was discussing this in a news interview, a news address statement to press, and he makes a boo-boo. He does. I mean, as soon as he says it, he catches himself as to why 13. Now, before you hear it, he's looking at the fact that we have 13 federal districts across the land. And he's trying to say that could correlate to that number. But I don't really think that was it. I think as he plays out with his boo-boo here, well, just listen. Here's Congressman Jerry Nadler.
Our predecessors made eminent sense when they rigged, when they pegged the size of the Supreme Court to the number of judicial circuits. As our country has grown, so too to the Supreme Court. 13 justices for 13 circuits is a logical progression. And that is another reason why I'm glad to join my colleagues in introducing the Judiciary Act of 2021 to establish the Supreme Court size as 13. That's a nice number. It matches. It's not a nice number.
Whoa. It's a nice number. You're gonna put a certain number on the Supreme Court just because you say it's a nice number? If that's your reasoning, if that's your intent, well, then why don't you stick with a member on the Supreme Court already, two of them. One passed. Ruth Bader Ginsburg said nine's the perfect number. I wouldn't change it. And Justice Stephen Breyer says it's a good number. We don't need to be changing, making and mousing around with it. But Nader says it's a nice number. Whoa, that was a little slip. They just want to say it's a nice number. I think we need to be thankful they didn't decide 27. I mean, that's another nice number. Well, let me see, what's another good number? 13. Wait a minute, let me go back to 7. I'll tell you a good number. If you play roulette, 17. Bet on 17. Why not make it 17? A nice number. All right, let's once again pick up Congressman Jerry Nadler trying to step out of his boo-boo.
Glad to join my colleagues in introducing the Judiciary Act of 2021 to establish the Supreme Court size as 13. That's a nice number. It's not a nice number. It's a proper number. It matches the number of circuits as it has historically, and it also will enable us to do justice and to rectify the great injustice that was done in packing the court. And some people will say we're packing the court. We're not packing it. We're unpacking it. Senator McConnell and the Republicans packed the court over the last couple of years, as Senator Markey outlined. So this is a reaction to that. It's a necessary step in the evolution of the court.
He is so off base. And now he says, well, and of course, we've told you the Democrats, the progressives have their own lexicon. They don't need your stinking dictionary no more. They know how to define words, and so we're not packing the court. We're unpacking the court because they're upset, of course, that when Mitch McConnell was the majority party of the Senate and there was a chance for Obama to make an appointment, Merrick Garland, well, the Senate wouldn't even meet to hear any nominations. McConnell just blocked it, said you're a short-term president. Well, actually, at that time, he had 11-plus months. He had a lot more than what Trump did. And, of course, when it came Trump's opportunity to appoint someone in the closing months of his existing term at that point, he had fewer months than Obama did. And this time the Republicans said, yeah, it's a good thing. Let's go ahead and do it. So they all played the best side they can. Now, my opinion was then, it still is, I didn't change it simply for politics. I thought that they should have at least heard during the Obama reign to hear, and I will call it a reign because I think he was considered by many to be king, not president. But anyway, they should have gone ahead and at least held hearings. Of course, it could have been just for show, nothing being done anyway, but they didn't. And so when Trump had the opportunity in less months left of his term than Obama did, I didn't change my opinion just because the politics didn't fit. I still said the same thing. If you didn't do it for Obama, you shouldn't do it here. Let the winner of the next election make that decision. But they did. And, of course, in hindsight, yeah, I'm very glad. Yeah, I'm glad. But I still don't change my opinion. That was what I thought. But now we have the progressives coming forward, and they want to say, you guys packed the court when you shouldn't have had the opportunity. And they're really upset because Trump got all the names in that three appointments, that's pretty phenomenal. And, of course, Biden helped out Obama by getting Merrick Garland now to be the attorney general. You never know where these leftists are going to go. And to that point, you've got Senator Kevin McCarthy out of California, Republican. Pelosi has been saying she also doesn't think we need to change the number of the court. She thinks it's okay the way it is. That is what she has been saying. Congressman Nadler would probably say we're going to talk to her and work with her. But Pelosi says, no, I think it's just fine. Congressman McCarthy of California, Republican, says Nancy will do a flip-flop faster than a pancake.
So they want to pack the court to protect their power. It's all about one thing, control. And do not trust Nancy Pelosi when she says she will not move it. Remember, that's what she said about impeachment before she moved impeachment twice. We've watched her time and time again to come to what the socialists actually asked for. She surrendered to the socialists many times before, and she will do it again.
Yeah, I fully believe that. Absolutely, she will. And to that extent, Joe Biden has done a flip-flop. I played for you yesterday, and it's worth hearing again. When Joe Biden, as a senator, U.S. Senator, 1983, talking about packing the court, Joe Biden then, compared to now, well, just listen to 1983.
The president has the authority to do it. Just if I can make an analogy that's not totally appropriate, but to talk about perceptions for a moment, speak of perceptions and why I think they're so important. President Roosevelt clearly had the right to send to the United States Senate and the United States Congress a proposal to pack the court. It was totally within his right to do that. He violated no law. He was legalistically absolutely correct. But it was a bonehead idea.
Yeah, bonehead idea. That's what he said then. Now, oh, I'm all for it. So Biden is joining the bonehead crowd. Maybe. And don't forget, the leftists are now saying Supreme Court expansion is actually infrastructure. Yeah, they're also putting that into the play of infrastructure. Infrastructure is child care, paid leave, caregiving infrastructure, and expanding the court. That's just infrastructure. Coming up, in the midst of the court, and we have to worry about what's happening now, and that's your Second Amendment rights. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Well, of course, we have this tragedy taking place in an Indianapolis FedEx facility. It is a tragedy. 8 killed. A gunman suddenly goes on a spree, and before it's all over, 8 are dead, including the gunman. They're still trying to sort out exactly why, and to the knowledge they have at this point, there's no clear motive. There's no argument that took place before or during, so they're not sure. And they also have 5 in the hospital because of that shooting at this point. And it appears, I believe, that those 5 are going to survive. And, of course, it doesn't take long for something like this. But it is absolutely shameful, but they have no shame. The bodies have not even been released from the morgue to their families, and they're already on the left shouting for more gun control, as if a gun control law would have changed anything. Well, we're going to look at what happened and how this guy had the gun. Did he buy it legally? Was he properly checked under the existing laws we have? Many times we find out that they weren't. But, of course, President Biden and others on the left have already declared that gun violence is a public health crisis. And we're saying we're going to do things, but we're not going to impinge on your Second Amendment. That's what they say. But I'd be very, very careful. Let me give you an example here. Senators Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, and Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, are pushing for federal gun control proposals that would basically mirror the restrictions that Virginia adopted in 2020, including a 1 handgun a month purchase limit. Now, do you need to buy more than one at one time? I don't know what your plan is, but you really think somebody is going to go out and buy several handguns and then go and shoot? You could make the argument if you want. 1 handgun a month. Again, it's just another stupid law. It's not going to change anything. If somebody's going to do it anyway, I'll take 6 months to plan. Or maybe I don't want a gun. I'll get a gun and a rifle. Does that include the rifle? We don't know. And in this case, apparently some kind of rifle was used. I haven't heard the term assault weapon yet, but it might turn out to be that. But I'll give you a survey. We keep hearing from the left that most Americans want more gun control laws. Well, a McLaughlin Associates poll just conducted April 8th through the 13th shows 72% of the general population, 72%, support the Second Amendment and its protections on the right to keep and bear arms. By a margin of 58% to 22%, general election voters said they were more likely to support a candidate who supports the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. Now, the Second Amendment Foundation founder and executive vice president reacted to the McLaughlin poll, saying, "As we've been saying for years, gun control extremists have been completely wrong in their desire to erase the Second Amendment and turn a right to bear arms into a heavy, regulated privilege." He said that notion doesn't even square with non-gun owners, according to the McLaughlin survey results. Yeah, there are a lot of folks that don't have a gun. They don't have a need for it. They don't want it. Whatever. And yet they still think Second Amendment, being part of the Constitution, should be protected. But we're going to see more attacks on gun owners. On Capitol Hill, the Oval Office, and of course in every blue state-controlled legislature. You cannot take your eye off of what they plan to do if they get the opportunity. Coming up, Chris Bedford, senior editor of The Federalist, talking about that CBS 60 Minutes hit piece on Florida Governor DeSantis.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable, but we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around under 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed and at the same time will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler is still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website, rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, rottler.com.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Well, as many of you know, earlier this month, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, on April 1, actually, last year, had issued a statewide stay-at-home at that time, locking down the Sunshine State for 30 days. That was, again, April 1 last year. And, of course, since that time, he's been looking for a way to open up the state, and, in fact, he has. And vaccines have helped, and they began to issue vaccines. And a decision was made to use the public's grocery stores as a way to reach a lot of the folks because they often would go to the grocery store. Why not give them a vaccine at that location? And here came the claim that the Publix institution, the company, was selected because it gave money to a political action group on behalf of Governor Ron DeSantis. And right behind them came CBS 60 Minutes going after the governor, claiming basically that he sold out. And a lot of people that needed the vaccine didn't get it because the governor was playing politics. They ignored so many facts of the story that would have said otherwise. And joining us now, Christopher Bedford, senior editor, I should say, for The Federalist, and he did an excellent piece about this DeSantis story. Welcome aboard, sir.
Hey, well, thanks for having me back.
You bet, always. We appreciate having you. Your piece, that folks, you can look it up yourself. It's in The Federalist. The piece was talking about that 60 Minutes interview, and it one of the sub-headlines says, what the story really says is that both CBS and 60 Minutes are willing to publish sloppy hit pieces on those who defy their narratives, no longer think it's necessary to even justify this propaganda. I'd like to hear your additional thoughts. Go ahead.
But the DeSantis derangement syndrome is the new thing hitting the media. They're going absolutely wild, trying to hit him over and over again. I got some family down in Florida, so I've been fortunate enough to be able to visit a few times during this pandemic from here in Washington, D.C., which is a fortified city where everyone wears masks outside. It's an open state. It's wonderful. I mean, some of the elderly people there who are at risk and some of the parents of very young children who just don't know, you'll see them wearing masks. Other than that, once you get off the airplane, you may wear a mask for maybe a few hours before you realize that, holy smokes, it's like 2019 here. That's made him target number one for the press. And they think that they know that he's a possible candidate for the president of the United States on the GOP ticket, and he would do very well against Kamala Harris. So this is something that they've been trying to take him down. Just this the other day, earlier today, Joy Reid, so that it seemed like the scandal, the allegations around Congressman Matt Gaetz were getting closer to DeSantis. They're saying things without any evidence. And if you look at this public story, you have to be someone who doesn't know anything about Florida to find it remotely believable, because Publix is the most common, most accessible, most popular grocery store chain around there. They gave $100,000 in support of Republicans. They gave $100,000 in support of Democrats.
Oh, wait. Chris, I got to stop. Please don't give the other side. We don't want to have a balanced report here. Go ahead. They gave $100,000 to both. Go ahead.
When you have left-wing journalists who are typically very much in the pocket for Democrats, like Chris Elizad over at CNN, who said that they don't have any facts to back this up. They don't provide the context. You can't draw conclusions. You have Eric Wemple over at the Washington Post, who's not as bad as Chris Liza, saying this is just a plume floating in a sea of innuendo. It makes absolutely no sense. Oliver Darcy at CNN attacks them. And then you've got some people over at Poynter Institute, Tom Jones, who spent 30 years reporting in Florida and Minnesota. And he's saying, look, this is really badly done. And, of course, what the left-wing press was most angry about, the biggest crime was that such sloppy hit jobs play into the hands of Republicans. They were saying, oh, this is going to make people think that we're unfairly targeting them. Of course you are.
Of course
they
are.
That's exactly what it's going to make people think.
The Project Veritas tapes that have been released show exactly what CNN was doing, that they admitted, at least the, quote, tech director, he's not making the decisions, but he's part of it, and he's given the inside story, basically. They were always going to what they could to defeat Trump by putting the COVID numbers up all the time, deaths. And you also have in Florida a Democrat mayor who defended DeSantis, said that's not at all what happened. They ignored everything that would have brought balance to the story.
The Democrats were aghast at this, because at the end of the day, when you look at Michigan or Washington, D.C. or California or New York, you look at places that have been very badly mismanaged. The economies have been shattered. The people are emotionally broken. A lot of people. It's been an unbelievable amount of effects on people's minds here and the level of fear that they have and distrust that they have. And at the same time, our numbers have not gotten better. People are still getting sick, even if they're not remotely dying at the level that people originally said that they would. You go to Florida, that's not the case. You go to Texas, that's not the case. And they can't admit that their religion around Dr. Fauci is wrong. And it drives them mad, and they're trying to do anything they can to do it.
To that extent, I mean, they all talk about we should Daytona spring break. Florida should be in the midst of a major crisis, a spike, a mass spreading, and so forth. There's a super spreader event, as was a Rangers baseball game in Texas. And if there's going to be a super spreader event, it's actually with the illegals coming across, because they're not really being checked, and if they are, they're released in the country anyway. CBS 60 Minutes, though. 60 Minutes, yes, it's always had that basic premise that it's going to be solid journalism and not swayed by politics. They just gutted the operation.
And it's so sad to see, because a lot of these outlets, I mean, they've been liberal-leaning. The press has been going left for 60 years or so, maybe since the New Deal with FDR, by and large. But they have really betrayed even any ounce of objectivity. It's no longer an argument at Thanksgiving tables if the media is liberal. People agree with that. They just say whether or not it's right or wrong for them to take those positions. In a lot of the press, they've decided that it's important for them. They're on the right side of history. They're fighting against the Third Reich. They're standing up. context and justice, situational justice, whatever ideas they have about it, are more important than actually putting forth facts. I mean, remember the 60 Minutes episode with President Donald Trump when they tried to interview him and set him up. And fortunately, they had filmed it themselves, were able to release the whole interview, and it showed what a hack job it was. It's very sad.
And to that extent, there's just been an update that crossed a few minutes ago that the U.S. Intel Agency is walking back the Russian bounty claim. The Democrats and the leftist media were using that to attack Trump. It never existed, nor did, of course, the Russian collusion, but they were finding everything they could at that point, and they'll continue. And they want to know why they're not trusted. What do you tell them, Chris Bedford?
The amount of wars that they tried to drive us into just because they didn't like Donald Trump were absolutely unbelievable. And the Republicans are patsy to this, whether it's Liz Cheney or Senator Ben Sasse, who said, yes, this is right. Ben Sasse said, we need to have Russians and Taliban in body bags over this. Well, it wasn't true. Every single person in the Pentagon denied it. Now, that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Reporters should keep on digging. But instead, what they did was they declared it having happened because it fit into their narrative that they wanted. The only chips we have, the only currency the press has is your trust, the reader's trust, to take time to listen to your radio program or to read The Federalist, because they trust what we're saying. And if we betray that, then we've betrayed everything that we're doing. There's no reason to be in this career.
I agree fully. And my career, most of the audience knows, I spent 50-plus years a TV news anchor, and I mean on the solid side of news. Many folks never knew my political views, nor should they as a news anchor. And if they chose, they often believed that I must be liberal because I was in the media. And now this program, I can speak my mind, but I still want to have a balance. I try to, and I always, like you, I quote sources so they can check it out. But CBS 60 Minutes, when they decided to do a hit job, and then they follow it up the following week, and their response to all the claims and concerns about it was just read letters, not admit, yeah, we did not talk to that person. We did not see. In other words, in their opinion, if we read the letters of complaint, then we brought some balance.
And the only letter that they read out loud was from a gentleman, Nick Bayorkas, from Vero Beach, Florida. And they said that he was a retired newsman, or at least strongly insinuated that, as if it added some credit to what he said. Now, they spelled his name wrong, so it took me about a day to find him.
Oh, yeah?
But once I did find him, I ended up calling him up yesterday. He was not pleased about that, didn't want to speak. He's retired now.
Yeah.
I couldn't find any mention of any media or his byline outside of his brother's obituary, rest in peace, in LexisNexis. And the only thing I found remotely connecting him to any kind of media was something on an old high school alumni website of his when he graduated in 64 and they'd kept it up. They put up this website after that said he worked at CBS. I went through the CBS transcripts of 50 years of CBS and didn't find a single mention of his name or in LexisNexis. It makes me wonder, what exactly is this newsman that you said as if we're all going to be afraid of that when you've got right here who I just listed, four public left-wing newsmen who criticized you with their names attached. Why don't you address those criticisms?
Yeah, and that was the other thing. If he's a news, why does he have to be in shadow? What's he fearful of if he's speaking the truth? Well, as we wrap this up, again, I want to thank you very much for your article. I encourage folks, go to The Federalist, look it up. It's Christopher Bedford. He's a senior editor with The Federalist, and how the 60 Minutes hit job just went ballistic and all puff, no facts. I want to thank you for your time, sir.
Thanks very much. Have a great weekend.
You too. We'll do it again. Christopher Bedford. Yeah, I mean, if the guy, as he said, he traced them down, and there's very little mention of anything. A newsman, and you're going to be in shadow? If you're speaking the truth, why do you have to hide out in the shadow? If you're going to go back to those kinds of claims, I can claim I'm president. I was elected president. You're not aware of that. In the second grade, I was elected president of the library club. I was president. Coming up, well, you got to wait to hear this one.
Big boy. Can't you hear me when I call? This This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Well, this is one of those stories. I tell it to you, and you're thinking, oh, that can't be right, Larry. You got to be making that up. Just like 60 Minutes made up their report on Ron DeSantis. Well, I've got it right here in front of me. It also comes from the Federalist, by the way, although you can find documentation elsewhere as well. But I'm looking at a piece written by Jordan Davidson with the Federalist. The title is Utah Governor Defends Racism. Oh, wait a minute. Don't jump ahead of me. Let me finish it. Utah Governor Defends Racism as long as it's against white kids. What? All right, here's what happened. The governor, Spencer Cox, was going through a Q&A with constituents. And there was a live tweet, apparently, from his official Twitter account. And one Utah citizen asked, this is the question coming in, if it's racist that the Utah Jazz excludes white children from the team's scholarship program. If it's racist that the Utah Jazz excludes white children from the team's scholarship program. The NBA created a scholarship program, and they identified as to fund underrepresented student of color enrolling as a freshman for the 21-22 school year. And every team is doing that. To qualify, students must have graduated from high school and must be person of color. They've given out, since they began this program, something like 50 full-ride scholarships to students of color, black, minority, however you want to identify them. So the tweet from the constituent for the governor was, is it racist at what they're doing? Their response from the governor is not racist. And then he states something that is obviously correct. He said, the Jazz can do what they want with their funds. Talking about the Utah Jazz, the basketball team. He said they can do what they want with their funds. All kids should have equal opportunities, and we're proud of the Jazz. That part is correct. But he did not answer the question. Well, I take it back. He did answer the question, is it racist? He said, it's not racist. What would happen? Riddle me this. What if the Jazz, I know they wouldn't do it, but let's say any corporation decided it's going to give out scholarship. Let's say Larry Connors USA created a college scholarship fund, but I'm only going to give it out to white children. Would I be called a racist? You know I would, and I would be if I'm going to limit it not on their ability or even a need, but upon their color of skin. Now, there are obviously many in the minority community. It's a need. They need financial help. I understand that. But when you say only based upon color, circle back, as Jen Psaki likes to say, and base it on need. Base it on need. And then we have the California Education Department. They're implementing a statewide math framework that to figure out basically a correct answer in math is an example of racism and white supremacy invading the classroom. It's titled, A Pathway to Equitable Math Instruction, Dismantling Racism in Mathematics Instruction. I didn't know math. Numbers 2, when I'm ciphering, 2 plus 2 is 4. I don't see any color in that, unless it's a black print on white paper. But the California proposed framework would show examples during math of how white supremacy culture has infiltrated math classes in schools. The document asserts that teachers would assess the student learning in math based on white supremacy culture, as demonstrated by students are required to show their work. I don't see that that's wrong, but what's it got to do with race? Then grading practice would be focused on lack of knowledge. Well, that's normally what we do. If you don't have the knowledge, you're not going to get a good grade. But are they going to say, kind of like that scholarship, that, well, if you're a person of minority, we're going to give you a higher grade or two? Listen, there are language barriers, and yes, there are difficulties for some kids, particularly in math. But why do you have to tie it into race? Why don't you just say this kid, this child's going to need additional help? Not because of the color of their skin. It may be a language barrier, and I don't mean just even from Central or South America or Mexico. Maybe they're have moved here from Paris and the kids just beginning to learn English. I mean, there are a lot of reasons. But why do you have to always put the race card in play? Math is tough enough, or at least for some of us. I have told you, and I'm going to stand by it. I've made it very clear. I mean, I've always said we had real math. I mean, real math for the first time in the third grade. Now, why would I remember real math in the third grade? Well, I remember that we had our first real math in the third grade because it was the longest 3 years of my life. That's my math. They finally got tired and said, "You're shaving, Larry. You need to move on to the next class." Listen, don't do everything based on race. Help the kids where they need the help, but don't base it on that. We'd all get along better. We'd get rid of this racial division, or at least we would come closer. But when you get an institution teaching that math is racism, you're not helping anybody. Coming up, Dr. Fauci and the head of the CDC on the hot seat when it comes to why are Americans under certain COVID rules, but illegals coming in, they don't have to pay attention to any stinking rules. We've got it coming up. Stand by. Second hour.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.